Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, Setlist's review of the music business year. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
We're back from our accidental break. I mean, we did intend to take 1 week off. We didn't intend to take 3 weeks off. But for various reasons, that happened. And we're sorry. But we're back now for our final episode of 2021, in which we're going to do things a little bit differently.
Yes, with this being the final edition of Setlist of the Year, as Christmas and New Year and all of that stuff approaches, we have decided that we're going to do a big review of the year edition. Now, this is something we used to do on Setlist every December at the end of the year. We always used to finish things off with our Review of the Year podcast, but we haven't done it for a while, for a few years now, because the last time we did this, we got slightly carried away delving into everything that had happened in the previous 12 months in the music industry and basically ended up being like about a 6-hour recording. Do you remember it was still in the days when we were recording in the same room in a studio, because in pre-COVID times, things like that could happen. And we recorded for so long that we realised the building was shutting for the evening.
Yes, there was one person left in the office who was like coming up and going, can I go home?
So we stopped doing the Review of the Year podcast because we couldn't live through that trauma again, but we think we found a solution to that.
Yes, we've picked 5 of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the year, which, I mean, that bit isn't actually particularly different to what we did last time, but this time we are going to force ourselves to talk about these things succinctly by giving ourselves a 5-minute time limit to discuss each one. So there will be no waffle this week. And if there is, you won't get the whole story because I'm going to be strict. I'm timing things and I'm going to be very, very strict. So we are going to be straight to the point or just leave stories incomplete.
Yeah, either we're going to meet our brief and tell you about the 5 biggest music business news stories of the year, each in 5 minutes. Or, with all the stories we've selected, you'll only get what happened through to about March or April, depending on whether or not this format works. So we're definitely going to stick to the 5-minute per story limit. The question is, will we manage to cover all 12 months of each story in that 5-minute? Or do you end up with a really unsatisfactory, useless podcast? We will see.
Yes, it's quite possible that this is going to be absolute chaos. And also, in this semi-game show format, I am both host and contestant, and that I don't think that bodes well. But we're going to give it a go. And yes, I'm going to time every story 5 minutes. I might let you know when we're running out of time. And we're going to have a high-tech timing solution. And because it's Christmas, isn't it? So I've picked some bells to signify that we're out of time. It's good, isn't it? Bells, people like bells.
Festive bells to confirm that each of the 5-minute time units is up.
Yes, so when the story is out of time, you will hear this sound.
I'm not sure how festive those bells actually sound, but
they're not very festive, are they? But I mean, what else do you want?
But just to clarify, people listening, when you hear those bells, it means our 5-minute time units have expired. It's not a call for you to go and worship and praise the birth of the baby Jesus. That's not what those bells are for. They don't even sound like that, those sorts of bells. So we should be fine. So, yeah, I think we're ready to go. Are we ready to go?
I think we're ready to go. Well, before we go, actually, we should say, because people might wonder otherwise, one of these topics is not COVID. Because, one, I don't think anyone wants to talk about COVID anymore, even for 5 minutes. And two, well, COVID's just kind of been part of every story this year. And I don't think we could fit it into 5 minutes. You'd have to focus on one thing and then people would be upset that you missed out their thing. So COVID, just assume that COVID is some kind of benevolent, not benevolent, the opposite of that. It's just a big horrible force surrounding this entire podcast and all of our lives. Was that chirpy enough for Christmas?
Also, as we record this edition of the podcast, it is increasingly looking like COVID will be part of our music business year 2022 review in 12 months' time, because clearly this pandemic is not going anywhere as yet. So yeah, although we will mention COVID a couple of times because it is actually kind of relevant to some of the stories we have picked, we have not picked the COVID-19 pandemic as a story in its own right, because to do so would just be far too depressing.
Okay then, there are 5 minutes on the clock. Please explain to us, Chris and Andy, this whole host contestant thing is already confusing. Please explain to us in 5 minutes what happened with the music streaming economy debate in 2021, starting now.
Okay, so we know there have long been an assortment of issues with the way that music streaming works. Any of you who've read the Digital Dollar book, you will know that. However, these issues have become a much bigger talking point as the COVID pandemic has extended, because streaming was the one revenue stream in the music industry which was not negatively impacted by COVID-19. But also, for various reasons, it is the music industry revenue stream where often artists and songwriters see a minority cut of the money. And as other revenue streams disappeared, many more artists and many more songwriters started to ask, why is that?
So this debate became centred on Tom Gray's Broken Record campaign and the Fix Streaming campaign from the Musicians Union and the Ivors Academy, on the back of which the UK Parliament's Culture Select Committee staged an inquiry, which, you know, they were a series of oral hearings involving representatives from across the music industry, and there were endless conversations, which were quite tedious, about how to define a stream.
Now, we know there are many different elements to the wider digital dollar debate. Hey, read the book if you want to know about all of them. But it has to be said, particularly...
Stop plugging.
We haven't got time to plug.
Minute and a half gone. Keep going.
Particularly once this debate had arrived in the UK Parliament, most of the time was spent on specifically what we call the digital pie debate, which is how streaming money gets shared out. And in particular, how the streaming money gets shared out between the song and the recording rights, the two different sets of music copyright, and when it comes to the recording money, how it gets shared out between artists and labels.
Yeah, and also, I mean, because in this debate, it's often Spotify that's portrayed as the enemy, but during those select committee hearings, it was actually the majors who tended to come across as the bad guys.
Yeah, and I suppose that was because with the whole how does the recording money get split between artist and label becoming the biggest talking point of all, then it became less about how much Spotify puts in at the start and how that money gets divvied up between the labels and the artists. And in particular, yeah, the major labels came in for some big criticism along the way.
So the Select Committee then published its report, which called for a complete reset of how streaming works. It basically endorsed all the demands that have been made by artists and songwriters and organisations like the MU and the Ivors and Featured Artists Coalition and the MMF, the Music Managers Forum. That included a number of proposed reforms to copyright law, including the introduction of contract adjustment and copyright reversion rights for artists, and the extension of performer equitable remuneration to streams. So artists would get at least some of their streaming money through the collective licensing system. We haven't got time to say equitable remuneration. Keep going, minute and a half.
We certainly haven't got time to say it wrong. So Parliament put out that report. The government is then obliged to respond to that report. In its response, what the UK government said was that the Select Committee had raised some important issues that needed to be addressed, but said the government it was too soon to rewrite copyright law. Instead, what the government proposed to do and then did is to convene a music industry contact group, is what they're calling it, basically a committee of representatives from across the industry to try and get an industry-led voluntary solution to the various problems. It also set up some working groups to look at things like transparency and data, and also commissioned some research on all of those copyright reforms you just mentioned.
So back in Parliament, one of the backbench MPs on that select committee, that's Kevin Brennan, proposed a private members bill that included those three copyright reforms. So the contract adjustment, reversion rights, performer ER, and the label community, that's the majors and the indies together, both lobbied hard against those proposals, arguing that they'd impact on the ability of labels to invest in new talent, and that all three reforms needed a much more rigorous consideration before you have 15 seconds.
The government continued to say that it didn't support changes to copyright law. As a result, there wasn't a vote on the Brennan bill. However, the government did say that it expected this contact group to find a solution by next September, and if it didn't, then it might return to Parliament to change copyright law in this domain like Brennan had proposed.
Ooh. Christmassy bells. That was very good.
There we go.
We should probably... Oh, no, stop now. Thank you. Thank you. How do I stop this? Shut up. Oh, God.
Anyone would think they were real bells, not your iPhone making a bell noise.
They are real bells.
Is that the problem?
The magic of Christmas. We should probably say that the reason that we were off for 3 weeks was because of the debate around the Brennan bill.
Well, that wasn't...
I mean, not that it took...
yes, the whole 3 weeks.
2 weeks to do... I mean, it felt like it. But the debate went on for a very long time and ran over our recording time, and then we couldn't do the next week either. You probably don't need to know that, but, you know...
Yeah, to be fair, two of the weeks there was a missing podcast because I wasn't in the UK and I wasn't able to record a podcast. But one of the weeks there should have been an edition of Setlist, but I was watching the longest parliamentary debate in history, where lots of tedious MPs stood up, and well, they were tedious, and as a result of that the weekly Friday lunchtime podcast recording slot was lost. So yeah, it was actually the fault of all of those tedious MPs that we missed so many weeks in a row.
Anyway, topic two.
Yeah, more tedious
start
politicians.
Let's take it in turns. I'll start this one.
Okay.
It's a funny one, this one, isn't it?
No.
So topic number two. It could be. 5 minutes on the clock. Andrew Malt, please get the ball rolling. I don't know if I can keep this thing up. 5 minutes on the clock to talk about Brexit. So, right at the end of 2020, with mere days to spare, the UK government agreed a post-Brexit trade deal with the European Union. And this set out how the UK would deal with and trade with the EU and its member states now that it was no longer a member of the Union. So that all sounds very clear and helpful, but was it?
Well, I can't speak for the entire trade deal because I've not read it. But what I can say is that one thing that became very quickly apparent once that trade deal had been published is that there was no provision in the deal for touring artists, which meant that there was no EU-wide provision that would mean that artists and their crews could continue to tour across the European Union without having to deal with any new visa or permit or carné requirements or any other bureaucracy. And that was despite UK ministers reassuring the music and wider creative industries at various points during the whole Brexit debacle that such provisions would be in that deal.
Yes. So, yeah, it was promised the whole way through, and it did take years to get to that deal. So it was a surprise when it was left out. Anyway, so this now all means that artists who want to tour in Europe from the UK need to deal with the different rules and regulations of each individual EU member state. And in some countries, it doesn't make any difference at all, especially if you're just going to go and play a small number of gigs in that country or those countries. But in other countries, artists and crew members need to get permits or carnets are required for kit and merchandise. There may also be new issues around taxes or cabotage rules as you tour around Europe.
So basically, it meant that Brexit was major pain in the arse for touring artists. Of course, superstar artists could hire people to deal with all of this extra paperwork, and they could afford to swallow any extra bureaucratic costs. Although even for those artists, the fact that there were these new requirements and costs were annoying, it also probably means that some superstar artists, especially US superstar artists touring Europe, are less likely to hire British crew members. They're more likely to hire crew members from within the EU. So it's a problem for all artists, but it's a much bigger problem for those artists who tour on a much tighter budget with much smaller profit margins, because for those artists, which is most artists, these new requirements could be the thing that makes touring commercially unviable.
So the music community quickly started to raise these issues in the new year. Both the EU and the UK were very quick to blame each other for the lack of any kind of touring provisions for UK artists in that trade deal. And it did turn out that both sides had made proposals on that, which the other side didn't like.
Now, while all of this was happening, it also became clear that the COVID pandemic was far from over. This is early 2021 now, and a new round of lockdowns went into force across Europe. Now, the only upside of the fact that the COVID pandemic was extending in that way was it actually provided a time slot in which the UK and the EU could get together to address all of these issues. So, you know, optimists were like, OK, we've got a few months where we can't tour anyway. Maybe we could get these issues addressed before touring resumes.
Oh, God, we're running out of time. did that happen? No, it did not. And under pressure from the music industry, the creative industries who were also affected, and plenty of MPs in Parliament as well, it was agreed that it was a major problem that needed addressing. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson stood up in Parliament and declared that he realised it was an issue that needed urgently addressing. He said he was taking a personal interest in it. And I think that was the point when everyone realised that we were just fucked.
Now, some developments have happened which were positive. So first of all,
40 seconds!
A deal was done with those European countries not in the EU, like Norway and Switzerland and Liechtenstein. Actually, not Switzerland. Norway, Iceland and Liechtenstein, although they're not particularly priority markets. Hey, talking priority markets, particular issues in Spain, and a bunch of those issues were addressed thanks to the UK and Spanish music communities lobbying hard, and to be fair, a little bit of work from the UK government as well. So there have been some positive developments, but plenty of issues remain, and it will only really become apparent just how big those issues are once the COVID restrictions finally lift and full-on touring resumes, and we're still expecting a lot of challenges and issues that the government still really need to sort out.
You can probably hear my phone vibrating as well, can't you? It's a nice little Christmassy vibration. I didn't think we were going to do that one. But we pretty much, I think that's some... Everyone knows what happened with that now. Liechtenstein, of course, didn't Liechtenstein have a population of about four people who all live on mountains?
But maybe there are four people who live on mountains who like going to gigs. So... very important that a deal was done with Liechtenstein and Iceland and Norway.
Who was the culture? Was that Oliver Dowden when he announced that in a tweet? It was, we've done a deal with Liechtenstein. He was so proud of himself.
The other thing, I'm going to say, some positive stuff has happened, but nowhere near enough positive stuff has happened. And at various points, the government were putting out lists of the EU countries where permits were not required. But that was the list of countries where they were never required, because as we say, in some countries, it didn't make any difference. So they kept trying to get some positive spin out of the fact that there were some countries where new permits were not required, but that was always the case. And they were heavily implying that that was a result of some work. But I think we are kind of cheating now, aren't we? Because we're still talking about this story and our 5 minutes are definitely
up. Well, it's our show. We can do what we want. Anyway, on to topic three. And this is the one that everyone loves. Everyone's been looking forward to. Everyone wants to talk about even more.
Especially Andy Malt from CMU.
Especially me. I love talking about this. It is...
I met someone... at the Line Check conference who is working in this space. I don't want to ruin the surprise. And I told him about our podcast, because he has a podcast too, although his podcast is in Italian, so I can't listen to it because I'm useless and only speak English. But he said, oh, I'll listen to your podcast. And we were talking about his business. And then he emailed me a few days later and said, I listened to your podcast. I understand that you hate these things and you have no time for these things. And I said, oh, that's Andy Malt.
Oh, come on. Who has time? What is nonsense?
We're going to talk about anyway. NFTs, basically. So
yeah. Oh, so yeah, we didn't actually say that. 5 minutes on the clock. Chris Cook, get us started on NFTs starting now.
So non-fungible tokens, they are not new. It's not that these things were invented in 2021, but they did definitely become a much bigger talking point this year, just generally and within the music industry, mainly because early on in the year, it became clear that these things called non-fungible tokens were starting to be bought and sold for ridiculous sums of money on the internet.
Okay, so I'll quickly explain what an NFT is. I know, without saying bullshit. So an NFT is basically a bit of data stored on the blockchain that says something about either a physical product or a digital file. For example, who owns that product or file, who has access to it or rights over it, and who shares it any revenue that the product or file generates. And obviously, you know, it's not just music. It could be art or, you know, anything really. It's like a slip of paper that says John owns this, but it's on the blockchain, so people get excited about it.
Now, it has to be said that most attention this year when it comes to NFTs has focused on those NFTs linked to digital files rather than a physical product. And lots of people talked about the idea of how, as a result of NFTs, we could now introduce scarcity into the digital market. And with scarcity comes value. That was the argument. Although it has to be said that in the main, where you have a digital file, whether that's an animated GIF or a JPEG or an MP3 or a video file or whatever it is, where you have a digital file linked to an NFT, usually the digital file itself is just stored on a server somewhere on the internet, which means that it can be downloaded and shared by anybody that can find it. And indeed, towards the end of the year, one guy gathered together every single digital file that had been linked to an NFT, including those that had been sold for ridiculous sums of money, and stuck them all up on a website that he quite neatly called the NFT Bay. So it is arguable whether or not really any scarcity is coming into the market here, because the digital files themselves are all over the internet.
Yeah, so like I said, what you're really buying is a line of data on the blockchain telling people that you own or have some sort of right in relationship in relation to a digital file. I mean, which is pointless. I don't know. But like you say, there's a lot of money in it. How long have we got left? 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Why don't you tell people about the money?
Yeah, as I said at the start, the reason why NFTs became such a big talking point this year is because NFTs started to sell for ridiculous sums of money. And I mean, you know, deals worth tens of thousands of dollars were not uncommon in this space. And so you had lots of people buying up NFTs, and then some were buying them. Well, a lot of people were buying them to speculate because these ridiculously high deals were happening. People were then buying them with a view to, well, if an NFT is worth 10 grand today, maybe it'll be worth 20 grand by the end of the year, which then, of course, becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because then the costs keep going up. And so people got excited about NFTs, including in the music industry, because in some cases, usually in the music space, if you were a known famous artist, you could make a high sum of money by selling an NFT. It has to be said, a big debate about whether or not these megabucks deals are a short-term thing. Is it a bubble that's going to burst? There have been a few wobbles over the year. It does feel really, it's the cryptocurrency guys. The people who bought, you know, Bitcoin-type currencies a few years ago, that then became worth ridiculous sums of money, and now they're spending that ridiculous money on NFTs. So plenty of people think that that bubble of megabucks deals is not sustainable. It will burst.
1 minute left. And I suppose, well, people, yeah, I mean, in its current form, I think it has to be. But I mean, there is one possible future in the long term, which people have talked about, which would be it being part of kind of the direct-to-fan products that artists and labels often sell these days as a kind of sideline to the music. And obviously the classic direct-to-fan product is a t-shirt or, you know, the vinyl release of an album. which they then sell directly through their website. But more often, and as has been, you know, the case in kind of video games for a long time, it's about selling kind of digital products and experiences. 15 seconds. Off
well,
you go.
Well, exactly. Although I share some of Andy's cynicism, I think this is where the long-term potential of NFTs are. Direct-to-fan is becoming less about T-shirts and vinyl, more about digital experiences. You're selling things like supporter satisfaction and bragging rights. And I think NFTs are all about bragging rights. And that is where the long-term opportunity is in the music industry.
Drowned out by the bell there while you talked about NFTs being good.
Did you deliberately set that up? So the one positive thing no, we say about the potential of NFTs in the music industry, no one can hear.
It was perfect. we're more than halfway through.
Hurrah!
I think we've done a lot better than I thought we would. So well done us.
Well done us.
I hope everyone is congratulating us quietly in their houses or wherever they are. I mean, the tradition is that people listen to this during Christmas dinner with their families. So I hope all of your families are standing applauding now, as they should every week, but particularly this week, because that's three stories we've done in 5 minutes each. Good stuff. Let's do the next one, which is not always a music industry. I'm not going to start talking about it before.
Yeah, that's cheating.
Which is the Apple tax. Andrew Malt, 5 minutes on the clock, starting now. Oh, thanks, Andy. Right. Well, like NFTs, the Apple tax is not a new complaint or a new problem, depending, you know, how you look at it. But it's
not that NFTs are necessarily a problem and a complaint, but okay.
No, maybe I've just anyway, the Apple tax is not a new thing. That's 20 yeah. seconds gone. Just ruining this for me.
Like NFTs, this is not an innovation in the last year, but lots of interesting things have happened is the point you're trying to make.
Yes, that's what I was saying. 30 seconds gone. This is more what I thought this episode was going
to
be like. Anyway,
using up so, our Apple tax time to get more NFT digs in there, I see.
Yes. App makers like Spotify in the music industry really object to Apple's App Store rules, especially around in-app payments. So the issue is that if you take a payment through your app on an iOS device, you have to pay Apple a commission. For the first year, that's 30%. I mean, not all apps, but a lot of apps. And it's a real bugbear for a lot of developers, particularly because another rule is that Apple doesn't let you take or signpost where else you could pay for it. So you can pay for Spotify on Spotify's website, but Apple won't let Spotify tell customers that.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to include a nice link or button within the Spotify app, which sends people to Spotify's website where they can pay their monthly subscription without having to pay Apple their 30% commission. So as you said, this has been a bugbear of app makers. I mean, not just Spotify. Most app makers that are affected by these rules have been moaning about this. I mean, actually, you can go all the way back 10 years when Rhapsody was complaining about this. But interestingly, in more recent years, various complaints have been made to regulators about these rules, or in some cases, app makers have gone legal in the courts. And it was with those regulatory investigations and litigation that we saw some interesting things happening this year, basically putting Apple under pressure over these payment rules within its App Store.
Yeah. So in Europe, there was a Spotify-initiated investigation by the European Commission with officials. Well, they sided with Spotify, it seemed, and they said in that the Commission's preliminary view is that Apple's rules distort competition in the market for music streaming services by raising the costs of competing music streaming app developers. So, I mean, yeah, the big issue really is, I mean, you know, people who take payments take a commission on that, but most payment systems don't also have competing products. So Apple obviously has Apple Music, which is a direct competitor to Spotify, and Apple Music doesn't have to pay this 30% cut on all new subscribers for the first year. As a result, because Spotify's profit margin, Spotify has to charge $12.99 rather than $9.99 for, I mean, it doesn't anymore because they've stopped taking payments entirely, but that is the big issue for them. There's now 1 minute 45 left. Continue, Chris.
Yes, so that investigation by the European Commission continued this year, as you said, with investigators kind of implying through some preliminary statements that they were kind of siding with Spotify on this. But while that investigation continues in Europe, over in Japan, another regulatory investigation into these actually resulted in some progress. In order to settle a regulatory investigation within Japan, Apple agreed to allow what it calls reader apps, which would include Spotify, not to start taking payments without having to pay a commission to Apple, but to start including links or buttons that take people to alternative payment options. And although that was a deal done with a Japanese regulator, Apple is going to apply that globally. So as of next year, Spotify will be able to include alternative payment links within its app. Although that doesn't help all apps, it certainly doesn't help gaming apps like Fortnite, owned by Epic Games.
Yes, and that was the big case around this in the US. So Epic Games was fighting Apple in the Californian courts, which, I mean, that's a case that's been running for pretty much the entire year. And the judge did actually reject many of Epic's competition law arguments, but did order Apple to allow alternative payment links within apps. Although Apple successfully got that order postponed in the appeals court because both sides are appealing the wider judgment, having not entirely agreed with it at all. 7 seconds.
Yeah, so that injunction didn't go into force. Had it done so, all apps would be able to include alternative payment links. As it currently stands, only reader apps will be able to from next year. But the debate and the dispute continues.
Blimey, we're down to our last topic. And I think we've actually managed to fit all these into 5 minutes.
Just about.
I mean, it's gone a lot better than I thought it would. Maybe we should do this every week. This should be the new format of the show.
Yeah, our podcast would then end up being, 10 minutes a week? I think our listeners would really prefer that. That could be our New Year's resolution.
Yeah. Do you remember that when we first started doing a podcast, the original plan was to do 10 minutes? I mean, this is going back 10 years. But we did have a plan to do a 10-minute podcast where we just really quickly rounded up. I can't remember if it was the week or the date. There was a time when there was a daily podcast, wasn't there, before me? But I think it was a weekly podcast that was going to be 10 minutes that just sort of bullet pointed the big stories of the week. And as I remember, we piloted it, but we didn't do that because we couldn't do it in 10 minutes ever.
Well, also, I think the plan was to cover 7 or 8 stories in 10 minutes. So, first of all, the podcast just got longer and longer and longer. Then we started cutting the number of stories until we ended up with our 2 stories in 30 minutes format. But
format took about 8 years to reach. But yeah,
with lots of very long podcasts along the way as a result. But I'm liking this. Everything in 5 minutes. Everyone's very busy these days. This is the future of podcasting, I think.
Of what you're saying, all podcasts should be like this.
Every podcast, it should be a law. When Apple gets rid of its tedious payment rules, it can introduce a new rule, which is that all podcasts have to be a 5 minute per story format. Some podcasts I listen to these days are getting up to 2 hours long.
I know, that's just too long. No one wants to listen to the stats would say otherwise, but I would say no one actually wants to listen to a 2-hour podcast.
But we could end up with this podcast, although having everything covered of note in 25 minutes, nevertheless being overly long because of these between story tangents. So maybe we should get on with the final topic for this review of the year.
All right, well, you're starting this one off.
Okay.
Chris Cook, finally on this special edition of Setlist, 5 minutes now on the clock about the music rights boom starting now.
So the value of music copyright, the copyright in songs, the copyright in recordings continues to grow every year thanks to the streaming boom. And while it is true that that COVID-19 pandemic we promised not to talk about has impacted on some of the music copyright revenue streams, particularly around live and public performance, which are more important when it comes to the song rights for songwriters and publishers. But streaming, particularly subscription streaming, has been totally unaffected by the whole pandemic. If anything, COVID helped sell more subscriptions. So as a result of that, the record industry in particular, but also the music rights sector at large, has continued to become more valuable year on year, including during the pandemic.
Yes, according to the IFPI, the record industry's revenues grew by 7.4% in 2020 to $21.6 billion. According to the economist Will Page, the wider music rights sector grew by 2.7% to $32.5 billion. And it's the majors in particular who are seeing the benefit of all this growth.
Yeah, as previously discussed,
3.5 minutes
in an earlier section, artists and songwriters would say, it's great all this growth is happening. We're not seeing the benefit. You can have a discussion yourself as to whether or not that is completely true or not. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, and we don't have time. But what is definitely true is that the major labels are seeing a significant benefit as a result of this increased value in music rights. As a result, Vivendi, the French company that used to own Universal Music, biggest music rights company in the world, decided it was time to cash in. And so this year it spun Universal Music off as a standalone business. It listed it on the Dutch stock exchange and made a load of money for both itself and its investors as a result. Just before that listing took place on the Dutch stock exchange, Universal Music had a valuation of 33 billion. Shares have generally been increasing since, a few wobbles along the way. But as we record this podcast, the current market cap value of Universal Music is topping 44 billion. So the majors definitely doing well on the back of the streaming boom.
I think that's euros rather than dollars, but there's not time to check because we've only got 2.5 minutes. There's also been increased investor interest in music rights with, when obviously investors were investing in Universal, but also, you know, companies like Hipgnosis have seen massive growth, particularly over the last 12 months, as they try to convince investors that song rights and recording rights are safe and sensible things to invest in. So, you know, they've really been growing that idea, particularly, I mean, over the last few years, but particularly, I think, in the last 12 months, and the continued growth of the sector has really helped that.
As a result of that, both with Hipgnosis itself, but also a bunch of other sort of funds that have got involved in this, every week now there is some big deal, usually involving a heritage artist or songwriter, where they are selling rights. Sometimes they're actually selling copyrights. Sometimes they're selling things like the writer's share on the song side or royalty rights on the recording side. But lots and lots of artists and songwriters doing deals with the Hipgnosis of this world, where basically they get a massive upfront check. The fund then controls those rights or royalties and will hopefully make their money back as the streaming boom continues over the next decade. And because those investment funds are all busy buying up these rights, traditional music companies, particularly the majors, but also companies like BMG, have also been doing similar deals. So as I say, throughout 2021, every week, there was usually one of these big deals for us to be writing about.
Yes. Well, I mean, just in the last week, as we record this podcast, Bruce Springsteen sold his entire catalogue, like everything, his recordings and his songs, to Sony Music for at least $500 million. And that's the biggest single deal like this we've seen to date, kind of certainly bigger than the previous big one, which was Bob Dylan, who sold his catalogue to Universal Music Publishing. That was just his publishing, actually. So in terms of like a single set of rights, Bob Dylan's probably still the biggest, but in terms of total value of the deal, Bruce Springsteen's right up there. 9 seconds. Anyone else you want to mention?
We expect many more of these deals to be done in the next 12 months, although it is sort of getting to the point of, well, are there any massive heritage artists left who haven't already sold off all of their rights? but there surely are, and we'll surely see them in the headlines in the new year.
Yeah. Who else do we have? Neil Young. That was one, wasn't it? David Crosby.
Tina Turner did a deal with BMG.
Yeah, The Killers did a bit. Lindsey Buckley. Actually, various members of Fleetwood Mac have sold off rights. Blondie.
But you know what you're now doing, don't you?
I do, yes.
And you're breaking the rules. Our 5 minutes.
Rules are made to be broken.
5 minutes.
Why does anyone write rules if they don't intend to break them?
The rules are clear. There is no room on this podcast for you to be reading out lists of artists who have sold off their
Paul
rights.
Paul Simon.
In the last 12
Red
months.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Of all of these in the last 12 months.
Prince Estate. Oh, am I? Yeah, that's a point.
Some of these 2020, in which case you're breaking two rules. You're breaking the 5 minute rule and the fact this is a review of the music business year in 2021, not 2020.
I'm breaking all the rules. Yeah. You can't tell me what to do, me. Anyway, yeah. That's it then. That's the end of the set list 2021 review of the year. And it went much better than I expected.
Consider yourself informed in 25 of those minutes in all the things you need to know about from the music business year that was 2021.
As we said at the beginning, this is our last episode of 2021, but we will be back in the new year for more great episodes of this podcast. That sentence, I didn't know where that was going. Anyway, we're going to be back, is what I'm saying. We're going to have another special, although I don't think it's going to have a time limit to kick off the year. So it could be a lot more waffly. But it will have a similar five-point format, I think. Are we going to reveal what it is now or let people wait?
I think we should let people wait.
Yeah, screw you. yeah, you can wait and see what that is.
But have a happy Christmas while you're waiting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we should. Yeah. That's what you're supposed to say, isn't it? Not screw you. Okay. Yeah, do have a very Merry Christmas if you're listening to this before Christmas. And if you aren't, I hope you had a very, very Merry Christmas and have a very Happy New Year. If you're listening to this before the new year, if you're not, I hope you had a very Happy New Year. That's the problem with podcasts, isn't it? You don't know when people are going to listen to them. Anyway.
If you're listening to this in March.
Have or have had.
Hello.
A great time. And we'll see you in the new year if it is not already the new year. That's all we've got time for on this. Well, I mean, we actually had a time limit this time. It's unusual. Normally, I mean, we've got all the time in the world, haven't we, really? It's a conceit. I don't want to lift the curtain too much, but we can make this run as long as we want. In fact, maybe I will. I don't care about the time limit. Time limit's up now. I'm just going to keep talking like they did in that Kevin Brennan debate, talking about things they like about music, experiences they've had in music that are not relevant to anything, and just make the thing go on and on for hours for no point and make us miss our recording slot for this pod. Anyway, I'm not bitter.
I listened to some music once, and so did my constituents. They, in fact, one of my constituents owns 17 records. That was the sort of... Oh, and there's a venue in my constituency, which isn't relevant, but I think I should mention it. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
I mean, they were running down the clock, weren't they?
They were.
They didn't want the bill to get to the voting stage.
They didn't want that bill to get voted on and the next private member's bill, which was actually, in a way, a more important... I mean, I shouldn't say this, should I? But it was an equally as important private member's bill, and they didn't want that to be discussed at all. Such is the bullshit of politics. But there you go.
Parliament is broken. Anyway, that's not our remit. Anyway, I think I was saying goodbye.
You were?
Yeah, okay. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We'll see you in January for a special edition, which we're not going to tell you anything about. But yeah, that's it. That's it for this episode of Setlist. Do remember, if this is the first time you're listening to Setlist, and I probably hope it isn't, but if it is, then subscribe. And even if it's not your first time listening, if you've been listening for ages but never subscribed, then subscribe to it in a podcast app, because that's good and helpful for us and helpful for you too. And less helpful for you, but still helpful for us, would be if you rated it and reviewed it. If you've got anything you want to email us about anything we've discussed this week or ever, or I don't know, anything, just email us if you want to. setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.